Hello, my name's Ben Harmon and I'm the Director of Stills, a registered charity and centre for photography based in Edinburgh. You're listening to Photography Down the Line, a podcast aimed at sharing the ideas of artists and photographers and other people from the sector that we're in touch with. For this episode, I spoke with the photographer Kirsty Mackay. Kirsty has an MA in documentary photography from the University of South Wales, Newport, and she lives and works in Bristol. Amongst other things, we talked about her series and book, The Fish That Never Swam, a project that considers class and discrimination against working class people. Combining first-person narratives with photographs, it takes Glasgow as a case study, looking at the root causes of the city's poor health outcomes and lower life expectancy. Kirsty's work has been exhibited internationally, most recently in the Facing Britain group exhibition, an observation of British documentary photography since the 1960s, alongside works by Martin Parr, Anna Fox, and David Hearn. Pictures from The Fish That Never Swam are currently on display in the exhibition Counted at the National Portrait Gallery in Edinburgh until September 2022. Thank you for listening. Hello, am I speaking to Kirsty Mackay?
Hi, Ben. Yes, you are.
Hi, Kirsty. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Where are you now and what might I be interrupting with this call?
I'm at home in Bristol and at the moment I'm working on a big funding application. So I would usually be in my studio and it's quite a big, ambitious project, so it's my kind of main focus for the next month or so.
Is it something like an Arts Council England application? Is it a very lengthy one?
It's exactly that.
Okay.
It's for my next major exhibition and book project. So it's also about working out how to do it, how to make it happen, and partnering with photography organisations and kind of making a framework for it. So it's a big, ambitious project and application writing is not my strong point, but I'm going for it.
That sounds really exciting. It'd be nice to perhaps at the end, when we get to the sort of what's coming up bit, I can ask you a bit more about that. But I do want to ask you about a couple of your other, some of your other projects, including book projects. But first, something I've been asking people is how the last couple of years have been, because I think it's interesting for listeners to find out how artists and photographers have been affected by everything that's happened over the last couple of years. So could you say a little bit about that and how your life might have changed and your work?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the pandemic was tough. I've got two children, so, and my partner's also self-employed. So we were in our dining room to start with, both working and with two kids homeschooling. But we were really lucky in that we got a grant so we could take on a studio, and that really changed things. So now I absolutely love having a workspace because I've never had that before. Mm. And that definitely impacts on my work. And I was also really lucky that my book was almost finished, so that was my focus during 2020 and 2021, was to working on the book design and working on publishing it. So I had that to focus on. But it's really interesting looking back, because you know, when I go into my Lightroom archive, I can see that the number of pictures I took in 2020 and 2021 is like 2,000 short of what I would usually take. So it resulted in taking way less photographs, but I managed to self-publish a book.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I imagine most people took more photographs during lockdown, but not in a sort of professional sense, I suppose. So the different, I suppose, if you're a working photographer. But that makes sense that it sort of afforded you time to work on the book. And is this the Fish That Never Swam book that you self-published?
Yeah.
Could you say a little bit about that project, actually? Because it's a project about life expectancy in Glasgow, I think. In some way, it touches upon the kind of issues, the kind of interests that you have demonstrated in a lot of your previous projects as well, this sort of interest in pertinent human rights issues?
Yeah, I had been reading about this phenomenon that it was called the Glasgow effect. And that is how people in Glasgow have lower life expectancy and poorer health. And I've been reading about it in the newspaper since maybe around 2010. I read an article in The Guardian about life expectancy in the Carlton in the east end of Glasgow. It was 54 at the time. And so at that time, I went to the Carlton and I spent a day there taking photographs. And I kind of concluded at that point, I couldn't take on the issue. I wasn't from that area. I didn't have connections in that area. And living in Bristol, I just didn't feel that it was right for me. But then in 2016, my mum kind of pointed me in the direction of the research for Glasgow Centre for Population Health. And they had done extensive research into the root causes of excess mortality in Glasgow. And when I read the research and I learned that it wasn't just about this one area in the east end of Glasgow, it was about everyone in Glasgow. And everyone in Glasgow is affected by this in varying degrees. And so when I realised that this is something that affects my own body, affects the community where I grew up, that gave me the kind of confidence to be able to take on the subject.
Whereabouts did you grow up in Glasgow?
So I grew up in Partick, and it's a really interesting area, and I write about it in the book because I think what was really interesting about the environment I grew up in, it's a very working class area, but at the top of the hill, you've got the West End. Mm. And so I grew up in an environment that was very mixed in terms of class. It was very mixed. So my friends at school, they lived at the top of the hill, and I went to play in their kind of big posh houses. So I was able to see that other people had other experiences. And I think that affected me because it didn't make my future seem limited in any way.
And it's really interesting that you talked about it being a sort of contemporary issue, not something that's a sort of historic issue that we might think of at the time of the great sort of housing changes in Glasgow sort of earlier in the 20th century, but it's something that's still very relevant today and affecting people living in Glasgow now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting project to photograph because the root causes are in history. And, you know, the maddening thing about photography is you can only photograph what you put in front of yourself. And so in the book, I have used a lot of other people's historical photographs at the front of the book that tell the story of some of the historical causes. And what I found is that what I could photograph is still the effects that are very present in people's bodies and in people's lives and also in the landscape. I was photographing, you know, the houses that had been knocked down and the traces of housing policy in the landscape.
While you're talking there, I was thinking of a quote which I love that I came across again yesterday from the artist and writer and photographer Hervé Guibert, who said that a good photograph is not one that captures or documents a moment, but one that is faithful to the memory of an emotion. You don't have to respond to that. It's a sort of random.
No, it really resonates with me. Before talking this morning, I was thinking, and especially with The Fish That Never Swam, every person that I met and I photographed, it was a big experience. And that feeds into the work. And I think you can see it in the photographs. The people that I photographed, I really care about. And many of the people I photographed, I spent a lot of time with, and I went back and photographed them, you know, two and three times. So it was a a project that I was really emotionally invested in, and I was able to give it an awful lot of time, and that does get reflected back in the pictures, I'm sure.
That's really clear in looking at the pictures. And I should say that they're on your website for people that are interested, kirstymackay.com. It's quite a lot of information there. And in fact, aspects of a film, is there going to be a feature film based around the work, The Fish That Never Swam?
Yeah, I'm working on a documentary feature. And what I'm really enjoying about that is the book was very much like, the aim of the book was to disseminate the information in the research and connect people's lived experience with the research. That was my role, you know, within making the book. And I've done that now. And so it kind of frees me up, but I can kind of leave the research to a certain extent. And the film is really the next chapter. And the film is really based around the people that I met when I was making the book, but the people who are really rooted in their own communities. And they are the ones that are pushing for change and saving people's lives. And so the film is really about the solutions and the change that's happening in Scotland.
So in a way, your photography is just one of the tools that can be used to actually make this change happen. Is that a way in which photography is, you see it as being useful to you?
Yeah, I think it's becoming more like that. I think, you know, photography has always been my main tool, and I always identified with being a photographer. But in recent years, I've kind of let go my grip on that a little bit, and other things have been coming into that. And I think one of the things that I found most useful is starting to do audio interviews. So with The Fish That Never Swam, it started really working when I started doing really long audio interviews with the people that I was photographing, and that really changed my process. So, you know, my camera is definitely a tool that I use to connect with people, but also my audio recorder is a really important tool for me because it sets out a space where I can just listen to somebody. And what I often find is that people, there's like an outpouring from a lot of people. So I'm not sitting down doing a formal interview. Mm-hmm. When you have the audio recorder on, people will just, they'll give you what they need to get off their chest. And that process, and just that's just that space to listen to people was really, really important. And then I think what happens is there's also like a space for learning on my part. You know, I'm really aware of the inherent problems of documentary photography when you take on a project and you've done your research and you go into a community that you're not from, armed with this knowledge that you think you have. And when you do that, if you listen, you learn so much. And there's this space of learning that goes on that then feeds into the work. Yeah. And we don't tend to talk about that space of learning, and it's so important. And obviously it doesn't always happen. Not everyone works in that way, but that space of learning is so important. And just slowing down and listening to people is just the most important thing.
Yeah, it really does come across in the work, as we spoke previously, the sort of emotional connection that you have, the relationships that you've built with people, with the subjects, and how important it is to you that they feel listened to, that their voice is heard, and that you are getting that across, you know, as much as possible in a way that they would like. Do you have a lot of conversations with the subjects of your photographs about how they're pictured, how they're going to be sort of represented in the series, either in text form or in a photograph?
Sometimes I do say to people, how do you want to be photographed, or how do you want to be seen? Do you want to come across? And then sometimes I will use that as a kind of starting point for how I make the photograph. But I didn't do that with everybody in The Fish That Never Swam. With that, I was really trying to find out which fragments of people's stories connected with the story that I was trying to tell. But what I always do is go back with the photographs and try and meet face to face with the photographs and get people's opinion then. And if I can't do that, I'll put the pictures in the post and I'll try and get feedback on the pictures that I've taken. And the other thing that I do is around consent. So I try and check in with the people in the pictures before each time it's published. So in every time it's published in an editorial, I will go back and I'll make sure it's still okay for me to publish it in that context. And that is quite, that can be quite risky on my part, because if somebody says no, I would honour that. But the reason I do it that way is because I know that some of the people I'm working with have very complex lives, and they may say, of course, it's okay for you to put this in a book, in an exhibition, or in the newspaper, but 6 months down the line, they might be in a very different place and people's lives change. And so that's the way I work with consent.
Yeah, that's extremely considerate and doesn't make it easy for you, like you say, but is an amazing thing to do. I mean, doing a little bit of research for our conversation, I remember that a picture of yours was used in The Guardian to when there was an article about the Facing Britain exhibition, and a photograph of, I think there are two subjects in that picture, but it was, you know, in The Guardian. I imagine to some people, yeah, you know, like you're saying, you have to tread incredibly carefully if someone really wasn't happy with that picture anymore, and then, you know, sees it in an online context like that, it's problematic. But I'm sure many, many photographers don't make the time to sort of check in like you're doing.
With The Fish That Never Swam in particular, I've been quite guarded with allowing other people to use the photographs and making sure that they get the context right. In particular, because it's been published pretty widely and outside of the UK. And so when that happens, especially if it's going to be published in an article in a different language, I ask to read the copy. Some people will let you do that, and some people won't let you do that. But I'm really trying to make sure that those pictures don't get disconnected from the context of the story, because that, especially in translation to another language, people can get things wrong really easily. And so I do ask for things from editors that are not that common, and it's not the way of doing things. But I feel a responsibility to the people in the pictures to use their image within a fair context.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear. I mean, I know, you know, from the point of view of working here, sometimes it's very difficult to maintain control, even if you're sending out an image with a title, just to make sure the title doesn't get lost or the date or whatever it might be. So I imagine that's even more difficult for you when quite often the pictures will have texts, quotations, sometimes the voice of the subject accompanying them as well. There are examples of these on your website, but I wanted to ask you about that. Is it difficult? So I think you've already talked about how the photographs are one aspect, but there's this relationship building going on and we're talking about this particular project, The Fish That Never Swam, but where you're making audio recordings, you're visiting and revisiting people over a number of years. And then you have the photograph that you're going to use and it's accompanied by a text. Is it difficult getting that text down to a certain number of words, or finding the words that do justice to the situation that you're picturing? Is that a difficult process?
It was difficult because I did really long interviews with a lot of people, and And in the end, only using one or two sentences of those interviews. But what I'm keeping in my mind is what part of their story connects with the bigger story of place that I'm trying to tell. So it was a really ruthless process. But I actually really enjoy that editing process. You know, even with the photographs, there were, you know, thousands of photographs, and you whittle it down to kind of like 80, 90 images, and you get, but what you're left with is, you know, the 1% that really communicates effectively. And it's exactly the same with text. I was going over 5-6 pages of an interview and like highlighting a couple of sentences, and you're just left with the real, you know, the crux of the conversation.
And to rewind a little bit, you did an MA in documentary photography at the University of South Wales, Newport. Is it there that you developed this interest in particular in the sort of relationship between photographer and subject, and, well, perhaps more generally, what, you know, how did you find that course, and how has it sort of informed the work that you've made since then in particular?
I think doing that course was really life-changing for me, and I think it taught me critical thinking. And I think before that, you know, I'd had a lot of opinions, but I couldn't necessarily articulate those through my photographs. But going to Newport taught me that kind of level of critical thinking. And then when I finished the course, my daughter was born the next year. And so it took me a few years to get into a big project where I could use what I learned on the course. And so I did that with my first book. My favorite color was yellow. And, you know, you talked about that relationship with the person that I'm photographing. And I think that's where it first starts. So with that work, it was all about gender and the color pink, and especially how it impacts in young girls. And so with that, I was going into people's houses and photographing girls in their pink bedrooms. And I think that's where it started. And that's my favorite environment to take photographs, is going into someone's house. I just think that's such a, it's just such a privilege to go into a stranger's house and talk to them and listen to them and take the photograph. And for me, I just absolutely love that environment of going into someone's house, because I'm just always really amazed by how hospitable people are. And, you know, they'll make you cups of tea, and they'll make you lunch, and they'll give you chocolate biscuits. And like Billy's mum, who I photographed, she always had the best biscuits. But people are so generous, and there's also that fine line that you're in someone else's space, and you can't just bulldoze into someone else's space, especially if you're talking about issues that are difficult, or where you might want to challenge someone else's opinion. So there's a really, it's a really interesting space to be in. And I just believe in taking my shoes off at the door and treading really lightly.
Some of the other projects you've worked on in relation to people's mental health and the drugs deaths crisis in Scotland, also perhaps not always necessarily going into people's homes, but entering into a very personal space, a very personal conversation with subjects, with people. And clearly they feel comfortable with you too. And no, it's not every photographer that can walk in and people can sort of feel comfortable with them in the room. I presume you're not taking in a huge sort of camera setup or anything like that. What kind of, I'm trying to avoid the question, what equipment do you use? But do you know what I mean? What do you, when you go into those people's homes, what kind of camera do you have with you?
I use a Mamiya 7, so it's a medium format film camera. But generally, I've just got it in a bag, and I don't set up on a tripod usually. But I think that's with the fish that never swam. I was just making really genuine connections with people and having really big experiences because I was listening to people who had the answers. It was like a huge jigsaw puzzle for me to learn about the subject, not just from the research, which is, you know, academic and done at a distance, but traveling across the city and learning from people's personal experience. I was constantly trying to find another part of the jigsaw puzzle. And so quite often I'm just sitting there listening to people's life story and totally in awe of how they've dealt with things. Also, it just reminds me of when I was really little and I would be at my gran's house and listening to the stories that she told, because I would be sitting at her feet looking up at her, you know, just loving all these stories that she was telling me about when she was younger. And there's something in that kind of looking up at people, because sometimes many people just look down upon, and there's I don't know, I can't quite articulate it, but there's just something in there.
Yeah, I think I understand what you mean. And you've grown up being partial to conversations, and but maybe feeling like you've been listened to, or knowing what it's like to feel listened to. And I don't know, all of this has obviously helped you become the kind of person that can, you know, walk into someone's home and make them feel comfortable, be comfortable yourself, and still kind of make the work that you need to do from that. With the Fish That Never Swam, what's sort of next for that project, apart from the film that you're working on? Is there a way in which it is sort of informing the statistical information that can be used at a sort of political level?
In some ways, I feel like the project is over because the book is out. It's out there. I've offered it out to the world, and I would love to see what other people do with it if they pick it up. So in a way, it's over. But what I learned from making that work is very much influencing my next big project. And I think what I was really interested in with The Fish That Never Swam is how can I show other people the effect of damaging political policies in our bodies and in people's lives? How can I show that to people? And that theme is very much present in my next big project, which is about austerity and economic policy, and finding those examples of how I can show evidence of that in our bodies, and how that's impacted, and how it has an impact on life expectancy, and it has an impact on infant mortality rates. So that theme's still
right. Yeah, no, that I completely understand that. There comes a point where the project is finished and you've done what you wanted to do, and now it's up to others to use your work in the way that they can. It's up to us to kind of take things forward to an extent. It just made me think of that amazing picture from the series of the baby box. Am I right? It's one of the pictures that's included in the Portrait Gallery in Edinburgh.
It's in the counted exhibition.
So I should mention that, which is on at the Scottish National Portrait Gallery until I think the end of September this year, some works from the series. One of the things I wanted to ask about, sort of a general question, is the issue of class in photography and working class voices, but also issues of inclusivity around the photography industry and why that's important. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I always like to talk about class because I think it's become a problem in the photography industry. And I think it really stems from the change in university tuition fees. When I first went into photography, especially when I was in London, it was very diverse. And I think over the years, it's it's actually become more exclusive because not everybody can afford to put themselves through university. And I'm very aware of how the photography world I'm part of is a very middle class dominant space. And what happens, you know, somebody said to me about Magnum that they were really surprised that the Magnum photographers in the UK hadn't touched on austerity. You know, quite often Magnum get together and a bunch of photographers will tackle one issue. And I can understand why that issue hasn't been tackled enough. And I think that when you're, it's to do with positionality. And if you are middle class, you're not in touch with other people who are perhaps really struggling and are on benefits. You know, your viewpoint in the world is different. And I can really see the advantages of having more working class voices, because I think, you know, the issue of austerity is hugely important. And, you know, obviously Jim Mortram has documented that, and other people have, but I also feel that it's an issue that's been underreported in photography. So yeah, class is something that I really want to keep bringing up, because I think doing The Fish That Never Swam really made me see the value in my own position in the world. And, you know, being a working class person from a working class area in Glasgow was a huge advantage for me to be able to tell that story. So I just really see the value in it. And the way I've been thinking about the photography world recently is I'm kind of comparing it to like a hurdles race. And, you know, the person in the inside lane has got 10 hurdles, but the person in the next lane has got twice as many hurdles. And in the lane after that, there's twice as many again. And if you're in a privileged position, you get to be in the fast lane. To add to that, not everyone's starting at the starting line. Some people are starting, you know, half a mile back, because they don't have the means to buy the latest camera and laptop and put themselves through university. And so what happens is the people in the outside lane, they've got one hurdle after another, and no matter what their ability or their resilience, they're inevitably slowed down. And they're also looking across to the people in the fast lane, and you also see people being lifted over the hurdles. And that kind of advantage comes from, you know, who your friends are very often. And the person that's in the fast lane is looking straight ahead, and they don't turn around to see the other people with more hurdles. And I really wonder what would happen if those people in the fast lane did just look to the side and they were able to see the amount of hurdles that other people less privileged have to go through. I just wonder if that would make a difference.
That's really brilliant analogy. And it's made me think a little bit about organizations like Stills that are working with photographers and presenting photography too, and just how much more work there is still to do in providing opportunities and making sure that opportunities are more widely available. I'm thinking about what we're representing when we put things on our walls, how we're selecting who we're expecting to come in, and all really, really important questions. I hadn't thought of the fee paying issue and the change, the relatively recent change, how much that sort of affected the issue, but that's really interesting to hear you talk about that.
I mean, there's a lot of change happening. I can see class being added into the agenda around, being more inclusive and more diverse, and I'm starting to see like free portfolio reviews and a lot of scholarship places on workshops. So there is change happening, but there's also so much more that we could all do. You know, we could all just look behind our shoulder and see the people who have more hurdles, you know, and we could all reach out a bit more.
We're running out of time a little bit, Kirsty. There are various other projects on your website that I wanted to ask you about, but one that I was curious about, Corona Diaries, was where you turn the camera on your own family. Is that right? Was that a sort of lockdown project?
Yeah, it was funny because we all had our different kind of support groups on Zoom during that time. And one of the ones that really helped me was Women Photograph. So I'm a member of Women Photograph. And the London chapter was having these regular meetups on Zoom. I was joining the conversation, and to start with, I was like, I can't take photographs. I'm teaching from upstairs in my bedroom, where I can still hear my kids arguing downstairs. And I didn't have the capacity. And I was also in fight or flight, you know. We were all worried about catching the virus. So I was in this place where I just didn't think it was possible to take any photographs. But meeting up with those other women online who were getting out there and taking pictures at that time when I was even scared to leave my house. And I remember going through my camera bag and making it possible for me to go and take pictures. So I was adding, you know, hand sanitizer and masks, and those were the things that enabled me to get back out onto the street to take photographs. But also there was that thing of looking inward, because we were all in our own small spaces. And so I did pick up my camera and photograph what was going on right in front of me, and you know, pictures of my children fighting and the craziness of living in that environment.
No, I really like those pictures, and there's nothing cynical about them, and it's not sort of deserted streets and sort of abandoned shop units and things like that. It's I was really, really, really pleased to see that project on your website.
Yeah, it's tricky because you don't necessarily want to share what went on within my house, but I do want to. There is something in, if you're going to photograph other people, I think you should be willing to share a bit of yourself. Like, I really remember at primary school, I had a teacher, and it was in gym, and she was showing us how to do a forward roll. And, you know, she was an elderly teacher, and she did this forward roll in front of the class, and it's all stuck in my head. And so I think that I really want to have that sort of dexterity of being able to put myself and my family in front of the camera and look at my own small space, and then also have that dexterity to zoom out and photograph issues that are out in the world, and also go further back and think of the kind of structures that create some of those issues. So I kind of enjoy having that kind of distance and viewpoint of, you know, really close and then much larger, far removed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, maybe think of Joe Spence. I don't think there has been a podcast episode yet where I haven't mentioned Joe Spence.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, but you know, that thing of putting myself in the picture, I imagine it's quite, perhaps once you're over the any nervousness around picturing your family, I imagine it's quite an empowering feeling as well.
Yeah, and one thing that's happened since I finished this at Nervous Mum is that I've been doing photographs of myself. So I've been doing nudes of myself. You know, since you mentioned Jo Spence, I mean, she's been a huge influence. But when I'd finished The Fish That Never Swam, I was still left with this question of whether my own body carried the remnants of political policy. So there's been a little side project that I've been doing as well.
Right. Okay. Is that related to what you were saying earlier about the next project about austerity and?
It's not. It's just a little side project that's come from The Fish That Never Swam, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it at the moment because there's only really three pieces. I'll probably just sit on it for a while.
And what else is next for you? Is there anything else in the pipeline that you're able to mention? Exhibitions or?
No, I mean, I really want to have an exhibition of The Fish That Never Swam. Mm. But my idea for that is to have an outdoor exhibition in Drumchapel, and I want to use that land where the council houses have been demolished, and I would really like to mark out the plan of one of the old council houses because my cousins lived in one, so that imprint still in my mind, and build a couple of walls and exhibit the work in that setting. But that's another funding application.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that will happen at some point. But my focus really is on the next book, an exhibition project. And I'm doing it differently this time. So I've done the research. I can see what the book will look like. I started writing the text. And I haven't taken a single photograph. So until I get the funding. But the photographs will be made collaboratively with families around England. So I'll be going into people's houses and doing workshops and showing them how to use cameras. And the photographs in the book will be pictures that other people have taken about their experience of the cost of living crisis.
That sounds really, really good. I look forward to seeing that. And is the Fish That Never Swam book, is that still available to buy or is it sold out?
Yeah, you can still buy it on my website.
Okay, good. That's good to know and to pass on. Thank you so much for your time, Kirsty, and for all your wise words. It's really been really good to speak to you.
Thanks, Ben. It's really, really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, and hope to cross paths with you soon. Thanks again.
Definitely. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Photography Down the Line and my conversation with photographer Kirsty Mackay. For more episodes of Photography Down the Line, we're hosted by Anchor and can be found on most podcast providers. Thank you for listening.